Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Cherish Hard by Nalini Singh, narrated by Justine O'Keefe. She walks in beauty, like the night, of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's best of dark and bright. From She Walks in Beauty by Lord Byron. Prologue. The Redhead and the Hardened Criminal. Sailor wasn't sure what the hell he was doing at a college party. He was technically still in high school. Okay, not technically, actually. Not only that, but he was a high school kid with buzz-cut hair and a huge black eye. The only things going in his favor were that he'd had his growth spurt at 15 and seemed as if he belonged at a college party.
He looks like he just got out of prison.
Sailor put on his most charming smile and turned to the sneering blonde who'd whispered the words to her friend, while knowing he'd overhear. Girls generally liked Sailor when he didn't look like a prison brawler, and he liked them back.
"Rugby,"
he said, pointing to his eye.
"An accident with house paint that wouldn't come out."
He pointed at his hair, which his older brother Gabriel had buzzed off for him earlier that day, while their two younger brothers laughed hysterically.
"I won't be making that mistake again."
The two girls didn't look like they believed him, but hey, he'd been polite like his dad had brought him up to be. Since Sailor had never been drawn to girls who got all snooty and looked at him that way, down their noses, as if he were crap scraped off the bottoms of their shoes, it was no skin off his back what they thought.
"You know, some girls go for cons fresh out of the slammer."
The comment came from one of his rugby friends, the same one who'd gotten him an invite to this party for which he was definitely underage, even if he didn't look it, his tall body muscled as a result of the game they both loved. Punching Kane in the gut for that grinning comment, Sailor carried on through the crowd inside the gigantic metal-sided warehouse that a 21-year-old named Cody had rented for this party. They were charging a $10 cover to pay the rental fee for the warehouse and for the sound system that was blasting booming rock music through the cavernous space. Sailor figured he'd wasted $10. He was tired from a full day at school, followed by his part-time job, and he needed to rest. The only reason he'd come out was because his parents were worried that between school and the part-time jobs he kept picking up, despite their telling him to take it easy, he was working too hard, with only a few games of rugby to break up the routine. When he'd unthinkingly mentioned this party, his mother's eyes had lit up. She hadn't even blinked when he'd added it was a college party and that alcohol would be a given.
"I trust you, Sailor,"
she'd said, her clear gray eyes holding utter faith.
"Go, have fun. Kiss a pretty girl. Get into a little trouble."
And Sailor hadn't been able to bear breaking her heart. So he'd stay an hour, buy himself a Coke from the bar since he had no plans to get shit-faced, then go home and crash like he'd intended, and hopefully sleep till 10 in the morning. Even though tomorrow was Saturday, he hadn't booked any lawn-mowing jobs, because Gabriel had a huge game coming up that night, and Sailor knew his brother would want him around during the build-up. Gabe didn't get nervous, not usually, but this was a seriously major deal. There were rumors he was being scouted for the national team, that if he played as he'd been playing for the past 6 months, like a fucking lightning storm, the next time he stepped out onto the rugby field, it'd be for his country. Sailor was freaking out on behalf of his brother, knowing Gabe was on the verge of achieving his biggest dream. Sailor loved the game too, but he had different goals. After finally managing to make it through the crowd to get his Coke, he'd just rejoined his teammates when he realized the group was still standing near the blonde with the beautiful face and the ugly insides, and she was being catty about someone else.
"Ugh! Can you believe Cody's dating that?"
"I know, right?" her flunky said.
"Not for long, though."
The blonde's tone was smug.
"I heard he's going to dump her soon."
Sailor was facing the right direction to see who Queen Mean Girl was skewering this time. He wanted to laugh. No wonder she was being bitchy. The girl with the moonlight skin, flaming red hair, and curves that made Sailor's entire body go hot outshone her without even trying. If he'd been the guy lucky enough to have caught the redhead's attention, he'd stick close to her too. The redhead smiled. Sailor's stomach grew tight.
"Who's that?"
he asked Kane, the other teenager having entered college this past year. He and Kane had met at the school's rugby training camp a couple of years back, the age gap between them meaningless when compared to the bond forged by their joy in the game.
"Who?"
Kane asked.
"The girl with Cody?"
Sailor knew Cody because the older boy played rugby too. They'd met a few times when Sailor had joined in a social game outside school, but they weren't best buds or anything.
"The redhead? Girlfriend, I think."
A nudge with one heavily muscled shoulder.
"Out of your league, Sail. She's a college girl."
Sailor had a strict no-poaching policy when it came to his friends' girlfriends, because what the fuck kind of friend didn't understand loyalty? But even from the few times he'd met Cody, he knew the other guy was a bit of an ass. So maybe Sailor would ask Kane to tell him the instant the redhead realized Cody's assish nature and kicked him to the curb. Then maybe Sailor would see if he could get invited to a few more college parties, parties she'd also be attending. Kane would get him in. It might be that the redhead liked blue eyes, possibly even enough to ignore the fact he was younger than her and still in high school. Of course, those blue eyes were currently bloodshot, with one circled by black and blue bruising. He was scowling at himself when the redhead looked at him a little shyly. Her glance scuttled away just as fast. She probably thought he was a criminal, too. His mother and father would be so proud. His brothers, on the other hand, would crack up like maniacs when he told them this story. Cody stopped not far away from them before turning to face the redhead. Sailor was annoyed that Cody's big head was blocking his view, but then the other kid moved. Whatever he was saying to the redhead had her going pale. Sailor saw her lips form the words, "What? No, you..." He couldn't make out the rest. Cody's voice rose just as there was a break in the music.
"Jeez, do I have to spell it out? I realized last night that I can't sleep with a tub of lard like you, not even for a chance at your mother's corporation."
Sailor was moving toward the two even before Cody stopped speaking, but he was too late. Eyes glittering wet and face so stark that it was as if Cody had stolen the life out of her, the redhead took a shaken step backward, and then she ran through the silent crowd, her stunning hair flying behind her. The music boomed again. People began to dance. Forgetting manners and good behavior, Sailor kept on shoving through the crowd with brute force, imagining the dancers as opponents on the field. It worked. He went through the warehouse door seconds after the redhead had left it clanging. Stepping out into the silent and barely lit street, the warehouse was located in an industrial area. He saw her running into the night.
"Hey!"
he called out, feeling like he was letting moonlight stream through his palms.
"Wait! You shouldn't be alone in the dark!"
She turned, looked at him, and ran even faster. A taxi turned the corner at that instant. Flagging it down with a desperate hand, she jumped in, the taxi made a U-turn, and then she was gone. The next day, an ecstatic Kane got the news that he'd been picked up to play for a team in Japan, and Sailor lost his sole line of information on his redhead. He went through endless photos from the party on social media, but she'd been there such a short time that no one had caught her or tagged her in any of their images. Cody had erased her from his profile, and no way would Sailor ask that asshole anything about her. She deserved better than to have her name come from Cody's lips. It was as if Sailor had dreamed her up, his mysterious redhead with the moonlight skin. 7 years later, the way you feel when you kiss him for the first time, like fire within your bones. From That First Kiss by Nikita Gill. 1. The Gardener with the Thigh Tattoo. Her ovaries were melting, or exploding, or something. Iseland Magdalena Rein Stefansdottir, known to everyone but her father as Isa Rein, told herself to step away from the window, right now, before the object of her fascination saw her and she turned as red as her hair. But her feet refused to move. Like a junkie, she had to have just a little more. Her teeth sank into her lower lip, her fingers curving over the edge of the window ledge. He wasn't human. That was the only explanation. No one was that perfect, like soda commercial perfect. Her toes had curled at first sight of him, but she'd managed to resist temptation for an hour. Then she'd peeked out because she couldn't help herself. And what was he doing but taking off his T-shirt? That was just wrong. It didn't matter if he was getting hot and sweaty doing all that manual labor fixing up the school's gardens. It simply wasn't fair to the female sex for him to take off his T-shirt and reveal all that rippling golden muscle. If that wasn't bad enough, he was wearing khaki work shorts, and they were short enough to reveal the edges of a tattoo that circled the upper part of his thigh. Isa wanted to run outside and order him to put on some damn clothes. How was she supposed to keep her head down and concentrate on her lesson plans when he was out there exuding male pheromones like they were going out of style?
Ms. Rein, what's so interesting?
Jumping at the sound of the principal's voice, Isa turned and tried not to look too guilty. Thank God she'd finally conquered the blushing that had tormented her through her teenage years. Sometimes Isa thought she'd spent ages 13 to 17 alternating between carrot orange and tomato red. Her mother had not been impressed.
How,
Jacqueline had asked,
do you expect to negotiate multi-million dollar deals if you can't maintain a poker face?
Never mind that Isa had never wanted to wheel and deal in the boardroom. Her desires were softer, yet far more subversive. They involved poets and novelists and a world of imagined wonders that CEO and financial powerhouse Jacqueline Rein simply could not see. At times, Isa was sorry that her mother had no ability to experience the magic that colored Isa's world. The rest of the time when she was around her mother, she usually had to fight the urge to go homicidal.
Nothing, she said brightly to the principal. Just taking a break.
After fixing the long chain around her neck, the older woman walked over to the window.
Nice view.
Isa felt her cheeks go hot red in flagrant disregard of all her commands and thoughts to the contrary. Mumbling something incoherent, she went to stand by her desk, where she shuffled paper around just to give her hands something to do. She should be mortified, and she was, but she was also disappointed at losing that nice view. Principal Cafferty laughed.
Admiring a fine hunk of a man is hardly a crime, Ms. Rein. If I were 20 years younger, I'd do more than get an eyeful.
A wink that made Isa burst out in laughter herself.
Maybe we should give him detention for having abs of distraction,
Isa suggested after catching her breath.
Ah, but then he might feel compelled to put his T-shirt back on. And that would be a crime against womanhood.
Expression solemn but for the dancing light in her eyes, Principal Cafferty walked over to lean her hip against the opposite side of Isa's desk.
I just came to see how you were. You're still okay with spending your summer teaching the evening class?
Of course.
It was only a single 90-minute class per week, which when you threw in the preparation involved as well as the student work she'd be reviewing, worked out to about 5 hours overall.
Adult students who want to study poetry will be a nice change from 15-year-olds who think English class is the third circle of hell.
Violet Cafferty grinned.
I had a little pushback when I hired you, young as you are in comparison to the other staff. But the students have excelled since your arrival. You'll have to tell me how you do it.
Music, Issa replied, finding her feet again as they settled on her favorite subject. Good music, good lyrics, that's poetry too. Once I make them see that, they're willing to come along with me for Shakespeare and modern lit.
I'm glad you're with us, Issa.
The principal, a bone-thin woman of 40-something with a penchant for tailored pants paired with brightly colored shirts, straightened from her leaning position. Today's choice of shirt was a vivid red that would have made Issa look like a stoplight, but was sophisticated and elegant on Violet Cafferty.
If you need anything, the other woman continued, or if you have questions about student enrollments, there'll be a skeleton staff in the office for 45 minutes on the days you'll be teaching. They're to arrive 20 minutes prior to the beginning of the class, so you can clear up any outstanding issues.
After getting Issa's nod, Principal Cafferty said, There'll be two other adult classes going on at the same time as yours. Diana Easton and Jason Jang will also be present at the school on those evenings. Issa already had all that information, but listened regardless. She knew Violet Cafferty was going over it again, because Issa had just completed her first year at this school. And it didn't help that Issa still looked ridiculously young. Her appearance occasionally made people forget she wasn't a new teacher straight out of training. Maybe the principal was just being extra cautious because this was Issa's first time teaching a night class. Her previous school had only offered sports and craft classes at night. Issa and her best friend had taken one on fencing and had nearly succeeded in stabbing each other to death 3 times in a single lesson. It was a good thing the swords had been tipped by rubber safety caps.
We'll be fine, she said once Violet Cafferty paused. Have fun on your vacation, and don't worry about us.
Issa had long ago overcome the crippling shyness that had hamstrung her as a teenager, plucked from a tiny village school in one country and thrown into a massive high school in another. Not surprisingly, her accent, red hair, and weight had quickly made her a target. A hint of the accent remained even after all these years. She still had the red hair, and she'd never be as thin as Principal Cafferty, even if she ate nothing but celery for a month. But she'd quickly learned strength as a survival strategy. Then there was her mother. With the dragon, it was either fight or die.
Rarotonga looks beautiful,
she now said to the woman who'd put Issa's career on the fast track by hiring her to teach at one of the most prestigious public schools in the country.
Is your friend from New York already on her way there?
Violet Cafferty nodded.
She's champing at the bit to ring in the new year in a bikini rather than buried under a foot of snow.
A beaming smile.
Sun, surf, and bottomless margaritas, here we come.
The principal left the room soon afterward, telling Issa she'd be available in her office for 30 more minutes before she was officially on summer break. Tempted, as Issa was, to return straight to the window and her own personal gardening porn show, she kept her head down and finished up her lesson plans. Having never before taught adults, she was building in a lot of room for discussion and for following avenues her students wanted to explore. It took her just over an hour. She couldn't help glancing out the window when she was tidying up. But the gorgeous, sweaty gardener with ink-black hair, no shirt, and a sexy tattoo around his thickly muscled thigh was gone. Drat! Disappointed, she packed everything into the pink satchel with white flowers that she'd bought with her first paycheck. Some people said pink clashed with red hair, but Issa didn't care. The bag was pretty, and it made her happy. As her little sister Katie had once said, life's too short to waste on boring accessories. After doing a final check to make sure she had everything and that the room was set up for her first adult class next week, she was about to walk out into the otherwise empty hallway when her phone rang. It came up with no name, just a local number. guessing it was a welcome call from a store whose loyalty program she'd recently signed up to because of how much she loved their 50s-style dresses, Issa answered with a cheery, "Hello?"
"Issa?"
Astonishment froze her in place. That voice. 2. Issa's Path to Ruin, a.k.a. the incident with the hot gardener.
"It's Cody,"
he said.
"Cody Schumer?"
A nervous laugh from the man she'd once thought she'd marry and live with happily ever after behind a white picket fence complete with a dog. A chocolate Labrador, to be precise. Thankfully, Issa had long ago ceased to feel even a glimmer of the attraction that had drawn her to Cody Slimeball Schumer when she'd been a 21-year-old with a few stubborn stars in her eyes and a hunger to be loved that was so deep it was a hole in her psyche. Being brutally dumped at a college party while at least 50 other people watched had cured her of any illusions she might have had about the man. But she'd flat-out refused to allow the experience to rip the final stars from her eyes. Issa still believed in love, and in happily ever after, and in white picket fences, and in chocolate-colored Labradors with goofy grins. She also believed that slime balls never changed their slimy stripes. It was morbid curiosity, more than anything else, that made her continue the conversation. What possible reason would Slimeball Schumer have to call her? Hadn't he gotten the message when she and Naina gleefully egged and toilet-papered his pride and joy ride one dark night after the dumping? They'd used pink toilet paper with princesses on it. It was the most illegal thing she and her best friend had done in their entire lives, and it had been glorious, especially because Cody had been utterly impotent, unable to prove his accusations. He'd huffed and puffed and gotten exactly nowhere, while Issa and Naina maintained angelic expressions and shined their halos. "Cody?" she said with a probably evil smile, her back pressed to the cold of the classroom wall and her eyes facing the window through which she'd ogled the hot gardener. "It's been a long time." Time she'd spent burying the memory of this ass the night he'd humiliated her.
"Yeah,"
Cody said with a warmth she'd once assumed was real.
"I guess you wiped my number from your phone, eh?"
Issa blinked, shook her head. Slime balls were clearly deficient in the brain cell department. Had he honestly expected her not to go nuclear on him after what he'd said and done?
"No job's worth prostituting myself,"
he'd said mockingly in the moments before that final humiliating tub of lard comment.
"You should have bought me a Ferrari, fatty. Then maybe I could have forced myself to do it."
What a prize.
Not.
None of that even factored in the worst thing. The day after dumping her in the nastiest way possible, Cody had hooked up with the stunning blonde who'd made it her mission to torment Issa through their high school years. "Was there anything in particular you wanted, Cody? Like a kick in the butt?" Her curt and businesslike tone seemed to startle him for a second. When he finally spoke, he said,
"Suzanne and I want to tell you before the news hits the world. I know we still have some of the same friends."
That much was true, though most of those people were shared acquaintances rather than true friends. The latter wouldn't touch Cody with a 10-foot pole.
"Suzanne and I are pregnant."
"I didn't realize you had a uterus," Issa said, even as the meaning of his words filtered down to create a big fat lump of coal in her stomach.
"Huh?"
A chuckle.
"Oh, you're being funny. You always were funny."
Biting back further snarky remarks. Had he been this vacuous when they dated? Had she been that desperate? Issa said, "I hope the baby is healthy and that the pregnancy goes well." It wasn't the poor child's fault it would have Slimeball Schumer and Suzanne for parents. That you couldn't choose your parents was a truth Issa knew far too well.
"Thanks,"
Cody said cheerfully.
"We're getting married, too. Anyway, Suzanne really wanted you to know."
I hope you two have the life you deserve. She hung up before he could say anything further. Then she just stood there, staring at the wall around the windows across from her. That wall had been painted by the art students who'd had her classroom before the school turned it into an English class. The art class had been moved to a location with much better light. Colorful and bright in its interpretive splashes of pigment, the wall suited an English class. Issa could point to it, and did, to demonstrate how any piece of art, including poetry and novels, could be seen in many different ways depending on the eye of the beholder. At this instant, she saw it only as a smudge of color, Cody's words reverberating inside her. Her cheeks flushed, her heart raced, and her knees, they threatened to shake. Snark, it appeared, could only protect you for so long. Even reminding herself that Suzanne was clearly clinging desperately to her past queen bitch status had zero impact. "I don't love him, not even a little bit," she said, and it was true. The hopeful, innocent thing she'd felt for Cody had died a final death that horrible night when he'd ripped her to pieces and laughed at her pain. She'd given him her battered, bruised heart, and he'd kicked it. Issa wasn't stupid enough to hold a torch for a man capable of such casual cruelty. But marriage and children and a stable home base, not only for herself but for her much younger sister Katie and brother Harlow, that had always been her dream. It was why she was putting herself through the hell of online dating with the precision of a business merger to end all business mergers. With her students on vacation since the end of the previous week, and Issa having no real obligation to come into school until her night classes began, her diary currently looked like that of a hyperactive serial dater, one who was heavily overcaffeinated at this point. Monday morning, coffee with Manuel. Dark-haired, dark-eyed, likes novels and poetry, fingers crossed. Postmortem. Did like books and poetry. Also liked the waitress, with whom he made a date while I was sitting in front of him. Then asked me if I was open to exploring my sexuality without boundaries. Monday afternoon, coffee with Beau. 5'9", blonde, mechanic. Comes across non-douchey in online conversation. Postmortem. Non-douchiness was a front. Monday night, coffee with Carl. Sweet guy who likes gaming. That's okay. If he's the one, I can read while he games. Postmortem. His current game was so hot he couldn't step away from the computer to come meet me. Didn't message me until I'd been waiting for 20 minutes. Can never go back to that cafe. Tuesday morning. Coffee with Henry. 5'7", brown hair, lawyer. Seems very practical and sensible and sweet. Postmortem. Thank God I only ever agreed to meet for coffee on the first date. The man spent the entire date on the phone talking business. If he can't even commit to a half-hour coffee date, I don't think he'd be able to commit to a wife and child. Tuesday evening. Coffee with Tana. 6'1". Some kind of finance job. Doesn't say much online, but some people aren't good at online conversation. Doesn't seem like a serial killer. Postmortem. No chemistry. He gave me his business card in case I want to invest in the future. Wednesday morning. Coffee with Wyatt. 33. Has a name like a cowboy. Wants to work on a farm. Postmortem. Wyatt forgot to add 40 years to his age when setting up his profile. Also forgot to state his photo was from a few decades back. Not ageist, but would really like my future husband to have his own teeth. Wednesday afternoon. Coffee with Gareth, with an I in there. Okay, parents gave him the name, so can't judge him on it. Manager at grocery store. Seems very normal. I am afraid. Postmortem. He changed his name to Gareth Atlas Bonemaker on his 18th birthday and thinks the great Bonemaker has plans for him to lead a revolution. Wednesday night. Midweek sanity check with Nana. Some best friend snorted wine out of her nose after hearing of Wyatt plus Gareth's situation, then forced me to make more dates.
Thursday morning. Tea with Ken. No more coffee. Brown hair. We'll wear rose in lapel so I...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?